Isn't today great? Today is such a great day. Everything is so great.
We're going to have a lot of fun. We got some wonderful people for you.
All you mommies and daddies out there who complain to the radio station, I got something to say to you.
And the first thing you've got to do is say the call letters properly. Okay?
It's an incredible metamorphosis of love and emotion and sensitivity and tenderness and fun and joy and happiness.
Did you know that this show represents health and hope?
Yes, a great day for compelling conversation. The Amy Beth Arkowitz Show, weaving together a mosaic of voices from the arts, politics, personal growth, and justice. How are you? We'll take on the cultural cacophony in measured doses, along with some great music as time permits, but we have a great guest to talk about mixing a literary legend into fiction, the book biz, and the writing process. We'll welcome Maurice Sinclair to the show in just a moment. And we'll welcome you to the show if you're listening live. It is Wednesday, November 29th, high noon out west, 2 p.m. Central, 3 o'clock here in the east. Our number in motion, 347-857-4505. If you're taking along for the live ride, avail yourself of the PopNet chat box and or the Facebook page. Twitter X feed is 24/7 at AB Writes, all being held by the talented EverReady TCS crew, Trudy and Aurora in the booth, MLA headquarters. Show brought to you in part by Duncan. America runs in Duncan. Indulge in all your holiday favorites. America runs in Duncan. Also by Old Navy, it's official. Time to dive in for holiday styles and savings at Old Navy. And by PopNet, arts, culture, conversation on air, online, up and running 24/7, featuring the Amy Beth Arkowitz Show. And those robust roundtables, we had a doozy yesterday, another one coming up tomorrow. Meantime, let's welcome Maurice Sinclair to the show. He's the author of the acclaimed Ben Crandall mystery series. And of late, the latest effort is F. Scott Fitzgerald, American Spy, where he puts front and center literary legend F. Scott Fitzgerald as possibly a spy in an intriguing, fun, historical romp. So, Murray, thank you for joining us. Congrats on the book.
Thank you so much, Amy. Glad to be here.
Oh, happy to have you. Delighted. It's a fascinating read, and I also say you have great cover art and illustrations throughout the book by a noted cartoonist, Rick Geary, is that his name? And
Yes.
Very fascinating. The story, though, what I'm interested in is how you mix fact and fiction. Now, you take F. Scott Fitzgerald, who we all know is a literary legend and has a larger-than-life myth all these years later. What brought you to the idea of putting him center stage as one of your heroes in the story?
Well, that's an interesting question. And just to backtrack for a second, I love the intro to the show, Have a Lot of Fun. I mean, that's what it's all about, joy, happiness, and bringing joy to people. And that's, you know, part of the process of being a writer. And I was looking for something new. And I had a dear friend at the time who was a production executive. And I'd written three books in the Ben Crandall series, and I'd loved the series, but I guess because of my disposition or personality, I was looking for something new, something to supplement the series with and to just go off in a different direction. And my friend said, you know, Murray, you've got to write a big book. Try to write a big book. So being the eccentric person that I am, my notion of a big book was to think about just think about what I knew and to try to come up with something original. And I was always fascinated by F. Scott Fitzgerald. And I was also never really a history buff, but fascinated by what happened in France during the occupation in Vichy France in World War II. And somehow the thoughts, they just came together in a crazy way. And I started working on it. I did an outline of the story, and I tried to pitch that to a number of producers, and was frustrated that I just didn't think they got it. And then I just decided to write the novel.
I'm sorry. I was just going to say you had the idea of making this like a movie first. Is that what it was? And then you decided rather than that go for a novel.
Yeah, and I just. I also really I like the idea of doing it in a series of letters, doing an epistolary novel. I found those, I'd enjoy those over the years. And so, Yeah, so that's basically how it came about.
Okay, very fascinating. And you, do you have any concerns, or did you, when you were writing it, about taking liberties with, it's not just F. Scott Fitzgerald, you have some other people, of course, his paramour at the time was also a real person. I mean, there were other real people in the book as well as fictional people. Did you have any trepidation about stepping on toes or rewriting, quote-unquote, history?
I was a little bit concerned about that, but Sheila Graham, who is depicted in the book and in a respectful way, was a public figure, and I didn't really worry about that very much.
So as long as they're public figures, they seem to be not, it's not so nerve-wracking, I guess. And most of these people
right.
are also no longer with us, so that helps, I guess, to some extent. But
right.
it's fascinating.
Right.
To make,
I mean, yeah, Fitzgerald died in 1940, so, I mean, in terms of rights of publicity and legal issues like that, that was really not a concern at the time.
So that's a safe bet if people are gonna,
yeah.
thinking about it. I've often thought about that. If you take real people, I haven't really done that. I've alluded to people or mentioned them, I guess, but not made them into real full-fledged characters. I've been tempted, though,
mm-hmm.
and you never know. So we'll see
right.
what happens
right.
as we go. But the fascinating thing to me about this book, too, and, of course, you have F. Fitzgerald as sort of the flawed hero, or one of them. You have the, is it Henri, the guy that's writing the letters?
Right, Henri Duval.
Duval, who
yeah.
tries to lures him into the story, and has his own. And he's a fictional character, obviously, and a quirky character of his own right.
Right.
It's fascinating, but the story that's also fascinating to me as a writer is the backstory of this book. You wrote this book a while ago, and you kind of stashed it, as we often do. Let's face it, we don't always get traction. You write certain things, and sometimes nobody wants them, and you put them in a shelf or, in your case, a storage box, I think, and then you resurrect it years later, and you say, hey, wait a minute, this is a good book. What am I going to do with this? So
yeah.
tell us about how you rediscovered
yeah,
it.
Yeah, it was a fascinating kind of experience that I wrote the book, and I had a literary agent at the time, who was very enthused about it and insisted that this is irregular for me, but she insisted that she was going to make a movie sale so quickly that we would create a foundation with that and then sell the book quite easily. And so she submitted the book to Robert Redford's company.
Okay.
And I don't, you know, I have no idea what happened, but all I can say is that it sat there for about
yeah.
6 months until
yep.
it was routinely rejected. And I was at a point in my writing life where I had sold the rights to the Ben Crandall series to some fly-by-night producers, whose option was about on the verge of expiring. And then they announced that in conformance with our contract that they had made a movie, and they'd actually, in order to keep the rights to the series, they filmed a home movie with their mother-in-law and kids, you know? So I had to fight a legal battle with that. Yeah. I had to fight a legal battle with my mystery series. And I was thoroughly disgusted with what happened with my agent. And I was having a very difficult time making a living. I was teaching at 5 universities, teaching creative writing and freshman composition. And I had a wife and 2 children. And I just decided to go to law school. And I put the book in a box. I went to law school. I became a lawyer and practiced law for 30-plus years. I'm still practicing law. And but about 3-4 years ago, I was going through my document storeroom facility, and deciding what boxes to throw out as I periodically purge the storage unit. And I opened up the banker's box and found some of my old manuscripts, and the F. Scott Fitzgerald American Spy manuscript was on the top of the stack. And I just picked it up and I started leafing through it. And I was just furious with myself that I abandoned.
There, yeah.
yeah, I was just. I mean, I'm. If you would talk to my friends and acquaintances, they would say I'm normally fairly humble, and I don't really brag about my writing, but I was just bowled over by this book. I could not believe what I had done, and I was so frustrated with myself that I didn't pursue it. So I got myself together, and I'd say three-quarters of my literary agents that I'd had in the 70s and 80s were deceased by that point. But I found one who was still was on the verge of retirement, and he loved the book, but was bogged down trying to sell it, and just didn't have the energy. And so I decided, I was thinking, well, you know, Mark Twain published Huckleberry Finn by himself. Stephen Crane did a lot of self-publication, and so did Edgar Allan Poe. And so I just thought about it, and then I talked to a cousin of mine who had a small publishing company that was very successful. It was called the Sarabande Press, and he sold the company a number of years ago, but he's very knowledgeable about publishing. And so I talked to him, and he said, Murray, if you're that enthused about it, you should just do this and do it. Start it out as a Kickstarter campaign. I said, what's Kickstarter? It's a crowdfunding vehicle, you know. So I did a Kickstarter campaign. It was very successful. And he urged me to do something different. He said, if you think it's not necessarily cinematic, but you think it speaks to you in a visual way, why not do what Twain did and illustrate the book? And so I knew a graphic artist who had done a cover for me in an academic book a number of years ago. I contacted the graphic artist, Rick Gehry, and he said, you know, I'm at a point, though, I'll do this if I'm enthused about it. Send me the manuscript. And he was knocked out by it, and then he did the drawings for me. And so that's how the whole thing came about.
That's great. That's a great story, and it's a great moral for folks. Don't throw your work away.
Yeah.
Save it. You never know. You can resurrect it, and sometimes it's worth throwing out. I'm not going to kid you, but sometimes there's some gems in there that you don't know, and everything is so capricious, right? I mean, you don't know who might like it, who might not. And as you said,
I have to tell you that with the review process, I eventually hired a publicist, but with my establishing of this publication, of this publisher, it was for the purpose of doing this book, but I intend to do other books that are not my own, but still, it was really an uphill struggle getting the book reviewed.
Sure.
But I have to say that the reviews for this book have just been just off the charts. I mean, it's been more enthusiastically received than anything I ever did. And with my Ben Crandall series, I mean, the sales were in the hundreds of thousands. And with this book, I mean, it's really basically a limited publication, but it's selling all over the world. And it's just been a fun venture.
It's the right time.
I'm so glad
that's it.
I did.
Timing. Yeah. Timing is everything, and you certainly had your share of rough and tumble encounters with some unsavory or incompetent people along the way, as I guess we all have, but you to have that happen to your series where they actually bothered to, they didn't make a real movie, they made like a fake movie just to hold on to it, makes no sense. That's crazy. But you finally got the rights back, right? Did you get the rights back?
I did.
You did.
I did get the rights back, thankfully. And the book was reissued by the Mysterious Press in 2019, all three books.
Oh, terrific. Okay,
the funny thing was I talked to the Writers Guild about it at the time, and strangely enough, they had the same problem with a number of other members of the Guild. And so they sponsored my lawsuit that was resolved by way of getting my rights back. And so,
I'm glad you got them back.
Yeah.
Talk to me a little bit. Now, you said you're also a practicing attorney, which is fascinating to me, because my dad was an attorney and also wanted to be and was an aspiring writer and did some writing back in the day, various stories and science fiction magazines, I guess, when they were popular, like in the 50s and 60s. But tell me about your process, because you're still practicing law. What do you do in terms of do you write every single day? Do you have a certain set time when you're writing? How does that work for you?
I don't write at any particular set time. Once I start something, I'm kind of maniacal about staying on it and just working on it every day. But it's only, I've been reading a really interesting book on writing. It's called Novelist as a Vocation by Haruki Murakami. And it's really, I recommend it to both active writers and aspiring writers. And he talks about, people who, everybody is different. I worked in publishing briefly before I started writing full time years and years ago, and at that time I was in charge of reading the editorial slush pile, and I discovered a novelist, Gerald Petovich, who wrote To Live and Die in L.A. many other highly esteemed books, and Petovich was a Secret Service agent. And treasury agent, and he used to get up every morning at 5 o'clock and right before he went to work, and he was very methodical about it. You just do what you need to do. I mean, it's a sickness in a way, writing, and if you need to do it, you will do it. And I think that I think that inspiration has to be a part of it. If you get too methodical and too mechanical about writing, that's how writer's block I kind of think of, it sort of evolves. You've got to be inspired.
Let it flow a little bit. What are you, a pantser or a plotter, as they say? You know that expression. You sit down, plot everything out, or do you just let it go and flow and how organically it comes?
I try to do a combination of both. I do kind of a sketchy outline to give me a basic overview of where I'm going. And I'd say the majority of the time, the end product follows the skeleton key outline. But sometimes it, veers off and goes in a different direction. But, I try to
open to that.
And I don't know if it was Hemingway or who it was who said that in terms of keeping a story going, you try to stop without finishing something. You just leave, you leave something in process so you've got something to come back to.
Exactly. That's what I try to say.
That's always been one of my cardinal rules.
Yeah, come back to it the next day. So you won't be so frustrated. You'll be ready to go. I agree with that. That's great. What's next now? Are you thinking of you have another book so you could resurrect from the storage box, or are you starting afresh on the next project? Or do you not have one yet?
I have one or two books in the storage box. I've got a manuscript in the storage box. It's kind of a Philip Roth type of story. I'm thinking about, I've just toyed with that a few times. And I want to do another Ben Crandall story. And the Mysterious Press assumed I would be doing that in 2019. I outlined an entire new book, and I looked at it and thought, I could write this, but do I want to write it?
Right.
I'm looking, I just want to do something that I feel really impassioned about. So I'm hoping that that's going to come together. And I'm just I'm still in the outlining phase and trying to do that.
Okay. Well, keep at it. Now, if people want to, this is the holiday season, so if people want to buy books for their book lovers, this is a good time to do it. Where do we get the books? Is it Mysterious Press? Is that the place to go? Or Amazon or your local bookstore?
Yeah,
all of the above.
The Mysterious Bookshop has F. Scott Fitzgerald, American Spy, in stock, and Tough Like L.A., the first book in the Ben Crandall series. The other two, Only in L.A. and Goodbye L.A., are available online. Anyone can go on Amazon and get any of the books, including an audio version of F. Scott Fitzgerald, American Spy, narrated by Terrence McGovern, who's a fantastic narrator.
Well, audiobooks is a big thing now. A lot of folks enjoy them, and that's a great boon to your book sales and your audience, I think, to make it available.
Yeah, it's
terrific,
a fun thing
Murray.
To do.
Yeah, no, it's a fun book, and the series sounds great. I'm a mystery writer myself, so I want to take a look at that series. F. Scott Fitzgerald, American Spy, is the book. Murray Sinclair is the author. We'll put some links up about where they can get the books when we're done with our show and it becomes available for podcast. Murray, thanks so much for joining us. I really appreciate it. I wish you the most success in the future with your other endeavors. And, of course, as we all know, when you get your name out there and people respond to this book, they're going to want more, so that's a good thing.
great, Amy.
Keep at it, Murray.
Yes.
I really appreciate you.
Okay.
Thank you so much for joining us, Murray. Take care.
Okay.
That's Murray Sinclair. The book is F. Scott Fitzgerald, American Spy. And we'll post the links to the podcast and, of course, places where you can get the books at the end of the show as well. It is the Amy Beth Arkley Show. Let's get you involved. Want to talk about George Santos? Will he be ousted finally? We'll see. Vote coming up tomorrow. Liz Cheney has a new book out. She has her reasons why Kevin McCarthy decided to go down to Mar-a-Lago after saying he wouldn't. We'll talk about that. Some great music to enjoy, too. And you in the mix. Are you listening live? You can join us via the phone line, 347-857-4505, Facebook page, PopNet chat box, and, of course, 24/7, live or on podcast. We're available at the Twitter X feed at 80 Rights. This is the Amy Beth Arkley Show. Stand by.
Put down the top, crank up the beat before I fade. perfect day. I love LA.
Show. Happy belated 80th birthday wishes. Randy turned the great 80 yesterday, November 28th, with one of his Rye classics, I Love L.A. Great song in honor of our guest that we just had, Marie Sinclair, who writes about L.A. and sometimes the seamier side in his Ben Crandall mystery series, and of course takes on Hollywood and the F. Scott Fitzgerald American Spy, the new novel. Fascinating guest indeed. Also Secret Agent Man, from Johnny Rivers, winking a nod to Holly on that one. Thank you guys for playing with me in real time. You know how much I love it. Don't forget, all the shows are archived for podcasts. Follow the Amy Beth Arkwright Show wherever you get your podcasts. I mean, to listen, select editions, too, on the Arts Radio Network, PopNet, PodStream, NYS Talk, etc. You know, all roads lead back to our website, amybetharkwright.com. So anything, everything on your mind, by all means, weigh in. Got a few folks chiming in about our interview. Celia says, sounds fascinating. I'll check out the books. You see, this is what we do, Murray. We make you a fan club. One reader at a time. That's how we do it. That's how I do it. I know. It feels like a slog, but we'll get you there. Believe me. Sherry says, good stuff, AB. Love your show. Love your way with the guests. Thank you. All right. Thank you, Sherry. Julio says, yeah, good show, good guest, but I'm more concerned about politics. Is Santos ever getting the hell out? Well, apparently MAGA Mike has said they will have a vote tomorrow, Thursday, on the floor. He is not trying to whip the vote, so apparently he's letting them vote as they will. A lot of the behind-the-scenes machinations, supposedly yesterday, were trying to get George Santos to resign. He won't do it because I guess they don't want to have the vote on their conscience when they realize that he's got 23 counts in his indictment, and you-know-who, the ex-Oval Office occupant who's twice impeached, four times indicted, has 91 counts hovering over his nest of a head. So think about that. That's why they want Bob Menendez, by the way, who's a Democrat from New Jersey in the Senate, to hang on, too, even though Democrats would like him to leave. He should leave. So should Santos. Because, yes, you are innocent until proven guilty, but there should be a higher standard for elected officials. When did we lose track of that concept is what I'd like to know. Your take, Twitter AB Writes, phone line 347-857-4505. If you find yourself taking along for the live Wednesday, November 29th ride, we also have the Facebook page and the PopNet chat box, and a lot of folks are chiming in, and I love it. I do. I love the live audience thing. I love the broadcasting on demand business, too, because you can listen whenever you want to. But, you know, I'm an interactive gal at heart. Chesapeake says, George Santos, what a loser. He's got to go ASAP. Well, we'll see about that. He says he will not resign. He made an indignant speech. I saw a clip of it yesterday on the House floor. He wears that ill-sitting red jacket. He thinks it's flattering. It's not. But he says he's not resigning, and then he goes on to a big spiel about the precedent it will set and all that. Again, as I said, you're right. You have due process. Step aside and face your charges and work it out in court, and we'll see what happens. I have a feeling he's going to jail. I have a feeling Bob Menendez may be bunking with him. I don't feel that the former guy, unfortunately, will wind up behind bars. He'll just delay until the end of time. That's my guess. I don't know for sure. And maybe he will get convicted. But, again, you can be convicted and still appeal, and he seems to be able to stay out of jail no matter what he does. But we'll see. We'll see how that all plays out. I know people are mad at me for saying that, but what can you say? Bye-bye, George Santos. He's on his way out, says Ruben. Well, we'll see if that really happens. He's being defiant till the end. I think he wants to fill up that prison commissary account because he's got to make a little money to go where he's going because he's – I mean, you talk about fraud. I still don't get it. I still cannot understand how these people did not vet him better in the media and the Oppo research. What was wrong with his opposing candidate? Because this guy lied big time and stole money while he was doing it. Other people are funding that other things. Laura says, don't be fooled into believing Nikki Haley is a good choice for Republican candidate. She believes in a six-week abortion ban and is a traitor to women everywhere. Vote blue. Well, that's the point. She's picking up some steam. She's picking up some endorsements by the Koch brother that's left, and some money is being funneled, but she's still way behind in the polls. Again, I don't believe in polls. Nobody's voted yet. We'll see what happens. I agree she's not the answer, but I do think she's a better answer, God forbid, the Republican wins, because I don't think she'll totally decimate our republic and take down everything and everything about the foundation of this country, but not a great choice. As I said, though, if she should get it, and it's a long shot, the nomination, let's look for some plot twists on the Democratic side, too, and I think we know what we're talking about, but let's wait and see. Vote blue no matter who. Vote hard. Vote down the ballot. And we'll just have to concentrate on that. I know we harp on this every show, but it's really too long. And Victoria says, how long till the Mary Magdalene of the House is expelled? Hashtag George Santos. He is playing it like he's a victim. The Mary Magdalene. I love it. He hung around with Jesus, too. He has so many lies. It's not even funny. And you know what is really good, though? If you step away from the news sometimes and indulge in creativity, embrace your inner artist. We help people do that, reconnect with their inner artist with our Inspiration to Action Challenge. I want to send a quick shout-out to Vince Putney of Vermont, who said, thanks so much for the nudge. I'm writing again. Love the short, sweet teasers. Keep at it, Vince. Keep us posted, please. Inspiration to Action, if it's worked for you, please give us an appraisal of it, and I will give you a shout-out because you deserve it. You're also spiriting other folks on. You know, push in the right direction. Let's start a creativity coaching counseling conversation. First one you know is on me. Reach out via the website, amy.arkawy.com. Easy access via the Twitter X feed, or just Google the darn thing. Hey, while you're there, peruse my stories, the award-winning Lives of Gordon Mystery Series, available via Cozy Cat Press, ebook and paperback. Other goodies are available, too, and we have links to the podcast, social media connections, and a place for you to chime in with guest suggestions, big story, and forgotten 45 requests. One-stop creative shop at the website, amy.arkawy.com. Remembering a dubious date in history, it was back on this date, November 29th, 1963, when the Fab Four appeared on the scene, launching the British invasion, Beatlemania, with their first hit, I Want to Hold Your Hand. It's also the day, November 29th in 2001, that we lost the Quiet Beatle, the great George Harrison, who passed away on that date at the age of 58. I was on the radio that day when the sad news broke, and we talked about it with various guests and listeners. Poignant moment. Can't believe it's been 21 years already. And boy, oh boy, do we miss you, George. But his legacy lives on with the Fab Four and solo. Remembering George Harrison and celebrating the Beatles' legacy on the Amy Beth Arquish Show.
Inside, it's such a feeling. Tell me why. you very much.
Still pondering the question, what is life, of the late, great George Harrison, the quiet Beatle, his mystique, his music, of course, still reverberates throughout the universe. On the Amy Beth Arkowitz Show and the Fab Four, where it all started, their first hit, released back on this date, November 29th, 1963, I Want to Hold Your Hand. It is the Amy Beth Arkowitz Show. Reach out, anything, everything on your mind, or Freeform Radio Hoopla in progress. The Twitter X feed, AB Writes, 24/7. If you're catching the live version of the November 29th show, you can hitch a ride to our Facebook page, PopNet Chat Box, and or the phone line, the Tin Can of the String Arrangement, 347-857-4505. A lot of folks chiming in, and you know I love it, playing with you guys in real time. Pressy says, hey, that was a good interview, AB. I love your show. It's a little bit of everything, and your outlook is so great. I hope so. I try. I don't know if it's always so great, but I enjoy it. I know we talked a little bit on the PopNet Roundtable about the Thanksgiving holiday and some of the things that people went through with their families and friends. And we tried not to talk about politics in my celebration that a friend was hosting, but unfortunately someone did come to the fore with some nastiness, or a little uncomfortableness, I guess I should say. Fortunately not a Trumper, but a Jill Stein aficionado who was saying, I guess I'll have to vote for Jill Stein again. Ouch. We know what happened in 2016. Please, no third parties. It's not going to help. Unless, of course, Nikki Haley somehow breaks through and wins the Republican nomination, and you know who runs a third party. That could be interesting. Not thinking that's going to happen, but you know what I always say? I loathe the polls. We don't know what's going to happen, and nobody voted, including in the Republican primary. So we'll just see how that all plays out. Dick Twitter X feed says, thanks so much for the show, AB. Your vibes are cool. Your guest was good. And I love the music. Love the Beatles. Sorry about George Harrison. Yeah, I was just seeing on Facebook a friend of mine noted that he remembers talking with me on the air that day, one of my radio colleagues, as we commiserated over George Harrison's passing way back when, 22 years ago. Wow, time does fly. So cherish every moment and do what you can. Do what you love. And celebrate the causes and work for the causes that mean something to you. Yesterday was Giving Tuesday. I think it's the season of giving for everybody to give what they can. It's not just about money. It's also about time and caring. And sometimes it's radical empathy. Just show your love and your care for your fellow person, your fellow citizen, your friends, your family, people who are lonely. I always say check in on your vulnerables. I have training in it. I love doing it. I do some volunteer counseling during this time of year. And frankly, I'm lonely sometimes too because I'm missing people. So I know it's a trigger for a lot of people. And, you know, it's celebratory. It's sort of imposed, the whole stressness, that's what they call it, people running around, overspending in many cases, sometimes overeating and overdrinking. Those are not good things. Sometimes to ward away the demons and to ward away the loneliness. So sometimes it's better to get together with people, focus on things that you love to do, focus on an activity, focus on creativity. That's what we always say. The creativity to me is always the fountain of youth. Just indulge in something that you love. Like we were talking about with our conversation with Marie Sinclair, find a topic, find a subject, and delve in, and you see what happens. You never know. And save your stuff. Like he said, he had that manuscript for F. Scott Fitzgerald, American Spy, in a storage box and resurrected it just a few years ago. So you never know. I have some crapola things that are in file cabinets that need to go in the garbage too, but there are some good things. You never know when you find it because the business is so capricious. It's really who sees it and when they see it and what they can do with it. But we live in the creative age. A lot of folks put their own wares out there. Self-publishing can be tricky because you don't always have it vetted properly or edited properly. And sometimes marketing is hard regardless because it's so glutted. But if you want to do something, you'll do it. You'll find a way to do it. So I always encourage people to just go for it and do what they can do. Let's run around that social media horn and see what folks are talking about. The George Santos thing looms large with a few people. Ohio Grinch, I love that moniker for this time of year, says, I lived in the metro area when George Santos was running, and the New York Times has some responsibility in this mess. His opponent tried to notify people, okay, I didn't know that, of the inconsistencies and lies, and he was ignored, then blamed for not shouting more loudly. Okay, see, I didn't know. Robert Zimmerman, who was running against him, I guess, did make some noise. Well, good for him. But, yeah, there was a local paper that did do a little digging, and somehow it got lost in the shuffle. I just don't get it. But the whole business about lying is one thing, and it's bad enough. But the business of stealing from your donors is a whole different thing. Sounds very Trumpian with the grift machine. All these people are about grift machines, and it's just crazy, if you know what I mean. What else we have here? Dan says, Speaker Mike Johnson says he believes in allowing members to vote their conscience in the George Santos expulsion vote. Is having a conscience still a thing in the GOP House? That's a good question. And, of course, that vote, as we said, is going to be happening allegedly tomorrow. So we'll just see how that all that plays out. Lizzie says, GOP's got nothing. Zilch, nada. If this zero Mike Johnson is the best they can do for Speaker, it's clear they're scraping the bottom of the barrel. In the name of all that's holy, vote blue. We know that MAGA Mike loves holy in his own version of it anyway. Please vote blue every damn time so we can have some sane adults running the country. GOP clown show continues. Mm-hmm. Indeed it does. And the latest thing that is fascinating is this Hunter Biden business. Hunter Biden has said that he would come to go before the quote-unquote, is it the Oversight Committee or the Weaponization, one of those committees that Jim Comer's on. I don't know which one that is. And he said that he will, as long as he can testify publicly. Now they're scrambling because they don't want him to testify publicly. What's that about? What are you afraid of if he doesn't want to testify publicly? I don't get that at all. First you say, can I get a witness? Then you say, no, thank you. GOP hypocrisy much? Weigh in on Amy Beth Arguello. Ah!
getting loco weed?
Everybody's doing a brand new dance now.
Come on, baby, do the locomotion.
I know you'll get to like it if you give it a chance now.
Come on.
On Carol came up with a hit record, Oh Carol, about it. And bad blood for the GOP. Can I get a witness from Dusty Springfield, as apparently Hunter Biden wants to testify before Congress, but in front of the world publicly, Jim Comer and co. want him to go behind closed doors. What is that all about? Controlling the narrative much? Hey, GOP, your hypocrisy is showing. Weigh in anything, everything on your mind. Twitter, X feed is AB Writes. Those listening live, last few minutes here on our November 29 show, you can chime in via the PopNet chat box, the Facebook page. And, of course, if you feel like it, give us a call, 347-857-4505. Don't forget, if you want to talk with us, press the button, a little hand waves. Otherwise, I just think you want to hang out and listen via the phone line, which sometimes people do. Go figure. We do have an app from PopNet, and I think BTR might want to have one too, so just check it out, and you can take us wherever you go. What else we got going on the social media site here? We have Seidy says, vote these worthless House Republicans out. We are paying these deadbeats for all their fruitless searches. They do nothing, and nobody is getting anything from the Congress. It's all about nonsense and getting on Newsmax and Fox. Yeah, that's what it's kind of about. That's what it seems anyway. Some of these people just want those shows and get the airtime. It's ridiculous. Carlotta says the guy who runs Home Depot, he's a billionaire, he says he'll continue funding the Trump campaign even if the guy is convicted. I cleaned that up a little bit, but thanks for the, thanks for the tweet. I know we can do what we want on internet radio, but sometimes I just don't want to say certain things, if you know what I mean. Trump becoming unhinged and crazy, says Seth. It's time for him to go. ASAP. Well, he's gone, but it's whatever. And Donald Trump has taken on MSNBC. He thinks he wants to put them in jail or get them off the air anyway. His screeds on Truth Social are scary. He's telling you exactly what he's going to do. So says Bertha P. Well, yeah, Bertha, I think that's right. When people tell you what they're all about, believe them. That's what Maya Angelou and many other people have said. So please do it. And we know what he's about and how we're going to morph into this illiberal democracy, as they call it, like Orban. And then maybe even worse than going towards Putin. It might not happen overnight. But we'll be headed down a wrong road. So that's why I'm urging Republican primary voters to go a different way, and certainly general election voters to go a different way, go our way. Vote blue, down the ballot. Every election, every seat, and every election counts. So you've got to go for it. But there are people that are throwing darts at Liz Cheney for coming out. She's got a book coming out, which I guess is going to be released this coming week, and she's making the rounds soon of all the talk shows and cable shows. But she speaks the truth. We see it happen. We saw what happened with our own eyes. It was on tape. I mean, you know, it's ridiculous for people to not think it. Obviously, the MAGA people don't care one whit what anybody, one of these truth tellers say. It's just, you know, outrageous. But she's out there, and I applaud her for that. I know somebody was saying, well, she's horrible because she voted with Trump. She is a Republican. She believes in those policies. Those of us who are more progressive and on the blue side do not believe in those policies. But I respect her for coming out and telling the truth and caring about holding up our democracy, such as it is, or the republic with democratic features, as fragile as all of those are, and it's going out the window. Trump's legal woes go out the window if he gets reinstalled, as does our democracy. Keep that in mind as we vote. And that's why I'm against the third party, where people are disgusted about Biden. They're not thrilled with certain things. They think he's too old. All of that, I get it. Might I remind you, all the third party people are 70 plus, number one. And number two, it's going to erode our chances to hang on to this democracy. I saw Joe Manchin, what I call shoe polish Joe, because he throws so much black on his head to make himself look younger than 76. But he was on some show saying, they said, well, what's going to happen? You're going to be a spoiler. I'm not going to be a spoiler. I've never been a spoiler. I don't want to be a spoiler. But who knows who's a spoiler? This is what he actually said. So his word salad doesn't make sense. And then he went on to say, who knew that Ross Perot would help Bill Clinton win the presidency? That's true. This is why I'm saying if Nikki Haley got the nomination, you'd have the MAGA people either crawling under a rock and not voting, or maybe Trump would run as a third party, and that could be intriguing. It's a long shot because it's probably not going to happen, but again, I loathe the polls. A lot of polls have Trump beating Biden in the swing states. We don't know. It's too far in advance, and I don't know who the heck they're polling. But I will tell you, as someone who worked hard on the Hillary Clinton campaign in 2016 and saw and felt that enthusiasm gap with every call I made, Jill Stein had an impact. We know that, and I knew we were in trouble. And she did give the White House, the people that threw their votes down the toilet, gave the White House Donald Trump. It's just true in Wisconsin, Pennsylvania, and Michigan. She made a difference. So that's the third party can be a spoiler. None of these people can win. So you're voting against, you're just throwing the vote away, and you're essentially helping Trump, and that's scary. That I would say. So the third party stuff has to go away. And by the way, Dean Phillips is not helping either. He says he will not run third party, but he's running a vanity campaign. He's a Democrat, a backbench Democrat congressman who has a lot of his own money, and he's pouring commercials out into these swing states against Biden, and that will ding Biden and his chances. We have to be united on that front. Now, you know, they should have thought about this a lot sooner, I guess, to get somebody else on the ticket. I still think there could be a plot twist. Joe Biden might resign, especially if Nikki Haley gets the nod, and Kamala Harris will be on the ticket. I mean, we have options. But they're limited, and I just want us to go blue no matter who. And by the way, Joe Biden, if we can cling to the republic, and history is still written by real historians, he will go down as one of our better presidents because he's done so much for this country, and for whatever reason, it's not resonating at this particular moment, but it will down the line, like Harry Truman and other people who have stood the test of time, so to speak. Anyway, that's what we're going on. Anybody else chiming in on the George Santos thing? A whole bunch of folks saying he's got to go now, says Brenda. The man's a fool, and he looks, as you said, that hideous red jacket is despicable. He's got to go. John says now there's a new thing that comes out that says nearly 90 House Republicans say they plan or are likely to support voting to expel George Santos from Congress. That means it's nearly certainly that the indicted lawmaker will be out this week. How does that make you feel? Good. It's about time. Beleaguered Rep. George Santos addressed fellow members of Congress in the House yesterday. He said that his expulsion, if approved by means of a vote this week, would set a very dangerous precedent for the future. Like what? Like you have to be held accountable? You know, you can't throw people out for no reason, but this is a definite good reason to do it as well. And, of course, the very funny part, as everybody has, a lot of people have mentioned, and I think I mentioned earlier, that Liz Cheney reveals in her book, the excerpt that was released, that Kevin McCarthy claims after he denounced Trump, shortly after January 6th, he went down to Mar-a-Lago, he told Liz Cheney, I had to do it because Trump's people called me. He's so bereft. He's in bed. He's depressed. He's not eating. The diet didn't seem to work, did it? Very intriguing stuff indeed. Hey, thank you so much for joining us. Very busy day. Don't forget all the shows are archived for podcasts. Follow the Amy Beth Arkwright Show wherever you get your podcasts. I mean to listen. Select editions and other appearances on places like the Arts Radio Network, Sirius XM, NYS Talk, Podstream, and PopNet. Thank you so much to Trudy and Aurora in the booth for keeping us moving. And thank you so much. Please drive safe, play nice, dream big, and come back and see us on the Amy Beth Arkwright Show. Thank you again, Murray Sinclair, for an intriguing conversation. We'll leave one in your honor. Every day we write the book on the Amy Beth Arkwright Show. Or when I write the book. Get on with it. You can do it, guys. You know I love y'all. It's Rockfile, by the way.
Well, I can remember like it was only yesterday. Love was young and foolish, like a little child at play. But oh, how lovers change. I never dreamed how easily. For now, I'm just a shadow.